Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is J. Ryan Straddle. He's a Minnesota native who now lives in Los Angeles, and he's out with his new novel, The Lager Queen of Minnesota. It weaves the tale of two sisters, basically. One is a hardworking heroine, Edith Magnuson. The other is her sister, Helen, and Edith is struggling to make ends meet while caring for her granddaughter, Diana. J. Ryan, when we meet Edith and Helen in the book, they've been estranged from each other since the 1960s. What brought about this rift?
Well, an unfairly divided farmland inheritance, which has happened on both sides of my own family, so it's something I can write about from experience.
Well, the only people who truly know the details of family politics are the members of that family. So is there more to Edith and Helen's rift that you may not even realize as their creator?
Oh, certainly. I mean, they're sisters. So there's a lot going on. And when there's only two sisters and one gets everything from the inheritance, the other gets nothing, oh boy, you know. And each one feels that the ball is in the other person's court when it comes to making amends. I've seen this happen. there's a lot going on here. And one uses, the one who gets the money uses it to start a brewery. And this is in the 1960s. This is not an era of, that's anything like there we're living in now, as a lot of your listeners will certainly remember. This is the era of, in my home state of Minnesota, Hams, Schmidt, Grain Belt, you know, when they were the primary local beers, Shells, who's still around. And, wanted to start in that era. And, you know, Helen's Brewery needed to survive somehow, and so they needed an angle in that time. The best thing you could do in the mid-70s, by the mid-70s, was light beer. So I fictionalize the kind of co-invention of light beer with Helen's Brewery, and that's what makes her brewery successful, is a beer called Blotz Special Light.
Well, and you mentioned these beers.
And Edith, meanwhile, you know, doesn't get any money. Ends up basically just this side of poverty, you know, and that cycle, persists in her side of the family for generations.
The beers you mentioned, though, and I remember Hams. I remember seeing those beer cans around my grandparents' house back in the 70s when younger. And they had the pull tabs. They didn't have the little pop-a-tops that you pulled the tab off, right?
Oh, yeah. Another thing I remember about Hams is they had a cartoon bear mascot.
That's right.
Boy, you couldn't get away with that now.
No, they can't even do the Marlboro Man now. But
Right.
But
right.
Edith and Helen, they're both strong women in their own way. And when I think back to perhaps the best-selling book of all time about Midwestern woman, it's Robert James Waller's Bridges of Madison County. And that book sold sold millions of copies. But one of the criticisms that I heard from people in Iowa was that the farm wife, Francesca, was such an unrealistic character. So how do you capture the realism of Midwestern women in your writing?
Wow. Well, I think of the women I grew up with. Starting with my mom, I mean, I feel like she's in many of the characters, and I write to please her, you know, and she's the one reader I think of, and she passed away 14 years ago, so unfortunately she won't ever read any of my work, but, I put her in my characters to keep her alive and consider the act of writing quite often a conversation with her, and I feel like I still kind of have to pass muster with her criticism in my head, you know, with her saying, no, she wouldn't say that, you know, or her saying, this is what she'd do in this situation. You know, I feel like she's coaching me, and by writing these books, I feel like I'm keeping her alive, and I couldn't grow up with the women I grew up with in Minnesota and write women any differently.
So,
my mom in particular.
With your mom's inspiration for this book, do you take her character traits or certain ones of them and spread them throughout different characters? Is that how that works artistically for you?
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. Helen gets a little bit more of my mom's career orientation and ambition and work ethic, and Edith gets more of the sweetness and warmth and generosity. You know, and each character has other inspirations as well from women and people in my life. But yeah, that was one way of kind of splitting my mom between two characters. That's very observant. Thank you for mentioning.
Well, I live here in Iowa, and, you know, just on the border of Minnesota. I've probably been to Minnesota twice in my life, though, and really my only knowledge in literature of Minnesota women is through Garrison Keillor and the Lake Wobegon folks, and they always seem like such simpletons in that writing.
Oh, no.
But your characters are complicated in their own way that may not be obvious to people who aren't from the Midwest, right?
Yeah. Well, I do think Midwesterners are extremely complex, but you have to earn it. You have to get to know them. The Minnesotans I grew up with weren't going to tip their hand in regards to their vulnerabilities very easily. You know, they can be very warm and generous and welcoming to you, but their complexity is something you really have to unwrap over a period of years and earn, for lack of a better word. I feel like, and that's not a bad thing, you know. but that said, because the Midwesterners I grew up with, anyway, were such tough nuts to crack and harder to get to know. I'm not sure if a lot of people bothered to get to know them, or would just reduce them to certain caricatures because that's the easy part to know, or the funny part, or the part that maybe makes for a more entertaining radio program. But to me, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to write characters that to me were fully fleshed out, that had problems, had vulnerabilities, that had contradictions that they live with and wrestle with every day.
Well, this book obviously has the beer culture as a backdrop, and you've touched on it a little bit. That seems to be a genuinely Midwest thing, especially in literature and art, right?
Oh yeah. I think beer is very Midwestern. I mean, looking back in the history of beer in our country, man, Midwest was full of breweries in the late 1800s. You know, only just recently did we pass the record for number of breweries in the country.
Well,
and once again, the resurgence is really, really substantial in the Midwest.
We even see in our little town here craft breweries popping up. And, why do you think they're so successful? Because, restaurants come and go all the time.
Yeah, boy, yeah, that's a great question. I interviewed a brewery supply distributor about this. And he said, I've been selling equipment to breweries like mad for 10 years. And he said, in that time, I've only seen like a fraction of them go out of business in comparison to restaurants. And he said, some of them are really bad. He said, we haven't quite reached that saturation point. I think, beer is different than food. I mean, well, for starters, with a brewery, the startup costs, for the equipment and the space and, securing the loan to start it. Okay, those costs are pretty substantial. But once you get the brewery going, it's a fairly low-margin industry. If you can make it through the first few months, you're probably doing okay. You've got a good shot, from what I've observed from the brewers I've spoken to. And there's no excuse to make bad beer. I mean, there's so much access to, ways of understanding on how to make good beer, you should be able to make a pretty good crack at it. And I also feel that in a lot of places, certainly where I live and where I'm from, there's more interest in people supporting local breweries than supporting the corporate chain beer. Because chances are they know these people. It's one more way to support your community, keep jobs in the community. In the Midwest, it's also fairly likely that some of the ingredients in the beer will be local. It's quite possible that there's some aspect of the beer that, or at least one beer somewhere in the lineup that might be completely farm to bottle. It's really lovely to see smaller towns have these breweries supporting people making a good wage that would normally be working elsewhere, opening spaces that are welcoming to families and people with pets, and where local musicians play. I mean, it's been a really lively new addition to a lot of the towns I've seen throughout the northern Midwest, and I just want to keep seeing more of them. And I think a lot of people agree with me, which is why I'm not sure if we've quite reached our peak yet.
Another thing I pulled out of this book is Edith's granddaughter, Diana. She chooses a vocational path after high school instead of college. And I've got nieces and nephews now in school, and it seems like, especially at the private schools, they tout as one of their big things that, you know, 95% of their graduates go on to a four-year institution. And I always think that's not a good thing, because 95% of people shouldn't be in a four-year school, go to vocations. Is that something that you have sort of noticed over the years that made you include that aspect of the book?
Oh, yeah. Well, I come from a family of truck drivers and nurses, you know. Most of the people in my family don't have a four-year education. I think my parents were each... Well, my mom was the first person in her entire family to go to college, and she didn't even complete her four-year degree at the time. She dropped out and went back when she was in her 30s. And so all around, I was encouraged by the example of people learning a trade, you know, or people just following some kind of passion that led them into a skill that they made into a living, like my uncle, who's a lumberjack in Minnesota. And I felt like, you know, I think that gets ignored too much. When I was in high school in the 90s, there was such an emphasis on college, college, college. You know, it seemed like the only acceptable alternative was the military. You know, you didn't go into talking about, like, oh, maybe I want to open a business. Or maybe I want to learn this skill or this trade and do that instead, you know. People would kind of look at you sideways back then, and I felt that was really terrible. I mean, there's a lot of really wonderful things, you know, you can do that don't need a college degree, or that you could get a college degree. Maybe you just slowed yourself down a little bit. I mean, I had a friend who wanted to be a radio DJ in Minnesota, and instead of going to four-year school and getting a diploma that said radio on it, she just started interning for a radio station. And by age 20, she was on the air when her friends, you know, or people her age who were trying to get that diploma were still studying to do the job she was doing already. So, yeah, no, that's a great point. And I'm so glad you brought it up, because almost nobody ever does. And it's such an important part of my life and, you know, something I just feel compelled to write about.
I know we got to go quick, but what took you from the Midwest to Los Angeles?
Oh, wow, it was work. Yeah. Unlike my friend Mandy, I did get a degree that said a film on it, and rather than just making films out of my garage, I went to college and I learned that trade and moved to Los Angeles to work in TV production, which I ended up doing for 14 years, working on shows like Deadliest Catch, Ice Road Truckers, Storage Wars, Bachelorette, until I sold my first book, and so yeah. You know, that was one way in, but I could tell you I didn't necessarily need the college degree to do that. It never got me a job.
Nobody ever asks where you went to school, do they?
No, not after the first job. After the first job, it was like, okay, what did you do in your last job? What'd you learn? Yeah, and luckily my first job was at VH1, where they overwork and underpay you, but the overwork part is good, because I learned how to do a million things. and I ended up doing them all later on. So, yeah, no, very true, man.
All right. The book is The Lager Queen of Minnesota by J. Ryan Straddle. It's available now wherever fine books are sold. J. Ryan, fantastic talking to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
If you're traveling in the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy,